It's Jennifer Diane Gostin, and welcome to Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land. A part of my identity is being an adoptee, being separated at birth from my original family and placed into foster care for 2 years has significantly impacted how I see my place in the world. You may have wondered what reunion looks like from an adoptee's point of view, or be embarking upon taking that journey yourself to search for your first family, or simply want confirmation that you are not alone in your experience. Wouldn't it be empowering to have many of your burning questions answered here? My guest is a fellow podcaster, adoptee from the Baby Scoop era, and a certified somatic mindful guided imagery practitioner. She resides in Modesto, California, and her name is Melissa Brunetti. I learned of her podcast, Mind Your Own Karma, and was drawn to the title like finding a book with a beautiful cover. After listening, I quickly recognized her style and skill of connecting with guests in a meaningful way as a great listener. In this episode, Melissa shares how she started the Mind Your Own Karma podcast before better connecting with the adoption community and rapidly identified a need for other adoptees to have a safe space to talk about their lived experience. The endeavor as a host has proven to be a healing journey for her too. During our chat, she defines what preparing for the magic means to her. Growing up, not feeling adopted, and being in reunion with biological family members, Melissa had what she calls a good adoption with great adoptive parents. Yet, that doesn't mean she doesn't still have scars from her relinquishment. She sees her healing journey as a gift that has shown her hidden treasures among the trauma. Allow me to introduce to you someone who is familiar with asking meaningful questions so that members of the constellation along with her get to know one another better. This time, she accepted my invitation for you and me to get to know her better. She hopes her story gives you hope, encouragement, and a feeling of community through her beautiful voice and words. Melissa Brunetti, I want to welcome you as a fellow podcaster, of course, an adoptee, and your podcast, Mind Your Own Karma. I love that name. I just congratulate you for the work that you're doing, and welcome to Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land.
Thank you, and thank you so much for having me on. This is going to be a great conversation.
I think so. I have been anticipating this for a while. The ideas that you present and how well you do your podcast, I said, I've got to have you on. I've listened to several episodes, and one of the ones that I really appreciated is when you shared your story. I think that was just wonderful to do that. And one of the things you said was, I have prepared for magic. And that has just stuck with me. And so I kind of want to start there. Being prepared for magic, it resonates with me. So you want to talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't always feeling that way. It took me a long journey to get there, a painful journey. But I think I had to go through that to be who I am today. And I wouldn't want to go back and relive any of it. But at the same time, I hold a lot of reverence for everything that I went through and compassion for myself on what I went through and how I handled it, the steps that I took to find myself again, and that I was brave enough to do that. I give myself a lot of credit for the work that I did. And I did finally come to that point where I really look at my traumas as treasures. There's treasures in the trauma. If you can find those, that's what keeps you going. And that's what helps you find yourself, your authentic essence and yourself. It helps you find your way home. You know, if you are in the fog, it helps you find your way through that to that lighthouse. And I did get to the point where I just see that everything is for me and not against me, even if it feels like it is. there is something there, but to learn from it, there's a gift. And so I am prepared for magic, and I look for that magic every day, even if my day isn't going well.
Right.
I try to say that to myself. There's magic in this somewhere. Let's find it.
Yeah, I love that. I love how you frame that. And I, too, agree that there are treasures from the experiences that we go through. And I give you credit, too. I absolutely do. And also in that episode, when you share your story, you mentioned the Snoop Sisters, right? I just chuckled when I heard that name. Because you're from a state, California, that is closed to adoptees requesting their birth certificates just outright.
Yeah.
And these Snoop Sisters helped you to get yours. And I, let's shout out to the Snoop Sisters, whoever they are, wherever they are in the world, because I know that meant a lot to get your OBC.
Yeah. That was crazy because my birth mother had named me. And so there was a whole different name on my birth certificate. That just kind of set me back, you know, just looking at that, because I didn't resonate with that baby, you know, that person at all. And it was just a weird feeling, kind of a disassociation with it, because like I really didn't feel like that was me. So it was very weird seeing a different name and different parents and, you know, all of that in writing right in front of me. Yeah. I felt a big dissociation because I didn't feel like that was me, because that was different parents, you know, named on there, a different name, baby on there. But at the same time, everything else was me. So it was just the weirdest feeling to see that original birth certificate. And I still kind of feel that way. I still feel like that's not me.
Right.
Is this my birth certificate? I don't even know how to explain it. It just was a very strange feeling.
That's interesting. And my experience was kind of, now I won't say the opposite, but I was named at birth, Bonnie Upshaw. Mm. And I had, you know, I was in foster care for 2 years. So I had been called that name for my first 2 years, Bonnie. And I actually kept that name, you know, as like a nickname. So even though Jennifer was introduced upon my adoption, Bonnie was kind of still in the background. So when I saw it on my birth certificate, I'm like, oh yeah, that is true, right? Like I've been told that.
Wow.
Yeah. So it did resonate with me as a part of me. Yeah. So that's just like the kind of the differences, right? In adoptees' lived experience and things that happened when we were all so young to recall what happened.
Right.
I've heard you say that you didn't feel adopted. You didn't grow up feeling adopted. And so I have an idea, because I have listened to you on your podcast, and then we talked before now, what you mean by that. But for the audience listening, what do you mean by that?
I mean that my family, well, my adoptive parents were great. I had, you know, we always talk about how adoptees win the lottery when they've got great adoptive parents. So I had great adoptive parents. I had a sibling that was biological with them, a son, and he was about 4.5 years older than me. So it was just the two of us. And my entire family never made me feel adopted. They're 100% Italian, and I'm like Scottish and Danish and German, but I feel Italian. Like I can't make that correlation to like my blood heritage. I feel like I'm Italian. If I bring it up, if I bring up adoption or anything about that, they just kind of like they forgot that I was even adopted. They're like, why is that even a thing? You know, I don't feel adopted in that family. They just don't make me feel that way. Not one bit. So, I mean, anything that I feel about being adopted is because it's rooted in me. It's not from them.
Right. Yeah, I get that. So let's dive into your story. Let's start wherever you wish and share however much you want.
You know, my adoption was pretty, you know, the normal thing, except that my birth mother, she was 19 and a student in college, and my dad was going off to Vietnam. And he basically kind of was saying, I don't know if this is my kid anyway. And so he wasn't going to be around. And when my mom was 6 months pregnant, she lost her mother. So her father got remarried before I was even born. So within 3 months, he was already remarried and said, I'm not helping you. So I don't know what you're going to do. So she really wanted to keep me. So I went to foster care for about 2 months. And then the agency was like, she's getting older. What are you going to do? Because we can't, just keeping her. So my mom went ahead and signed the adoption papers. And I guess I just found out this recently. She worked at social services. And we actually lived very close. We probably lived about 30 minutes away from each other. And she worked for social services and got her master's degree so that she could have access to find out where I was at all times. So she was actually kind of stalking me a little bit to find out where I was living and, kind of some things about my life, I guess. So that was interesting to find out. I didn't know that. But, growing up, I always had a feeling, I was always scared. I remember always being terrified. And I couldn't really put my finger on it, but I had a neighbor, and I remember I was like 3 years old, and he would come over, and I would be grabbing onto my mom's leg because he would always tell me, I'm going to take you home. I'm going to take you home with me. And I was so scared that he was going to take me from my mom. And, he didn't know. He didn't know. He was just trying to, tell me, oh, it's so cute and everything. But it terrified me. And I kind of grew up that way. I think I kind of buried a lot of that anxiety and things like that. I was not outgoing. I didn't do a lot of things. I didn't have a lot of friends. Very low self-esteem growing up, which kind of got me into marrying the first guy that came along, even though I was like barely 21 when I got married, thinking that this was the only person that was going to come along with the fact that I had some attachment issues where I didn't want anyone to leave me. I really stuck my claws into this guy and like, you're not going anywhere because if I don't want to feel that again. So we got married. Like I said, I was barely 21. Immediately kind of just played the part of, the good wife. We had a kid 2 years later and we had, we had a boy and we had a girl and the, picket fence, went to church, the whole, thing. I think I was about 40 and I was having major anxiety attacks, which I'd never had in my life. I was having thoughts of suicide. I remember pacing my home when nobody was there because I had an urge just to go pull a knife out of the drawer. So I just kept like pacing and talking to myself until someone would come home to distract me. And I was just like, what in the world's happening? I went to a bunch of doctors. Nobody found anything wrong with me. So, of course, they just put me on like depression, anxiety medication. One day I just stopped, and you're not supposed to, but I just stopped taking all that stuff because I just felt so lost and not myself. That was the day that I decided that I had to fight to find myself, that I realized that I was wearing a mask my entire life and I wanted to take it off. I was ready. That caused a lot of changes in my life. I got divorced. It caused some friction between me and one of my children, which is still to this day kind of an ongoing thing. But I always say that I have to take responsibility for that because I not only was being an actor in my own life, but I was being an actor in my kids' life as well. And I wasn't being authentic and showing them an authentic mom. And so when I started doing that, my son was like, who are you? And, where's my mom? And so I have to take some responsibility for that, and where our relationship is at this point. I just have to keep hoping that me becoming more authentic and being happy and more myself and him, learning about who I really am is going to change him in some ways at some point. But I don't know. So that's where that's at. And then I just slowly started feeling my way back. I mean, I really didn't even know what my favorite color was. I was so lost. I didn't know what my favorite food was. Literally starting with those very small things. Oh, I like doing this, or oh, I like Italian food. I like Chinese food. Oh, my favorite color is blue, you know. Little things like that, just slowly, slowly getting back to my authentic self. And, you know, I think that's always a work in progress. I think we're always, because we're always changing, you know, as we get older, things change. And so we're always kind of striving to find our authentic self in this world, in this crazy world. But yeah, so I think that's kind of the journey to where I am now.
And what a beautiful journey to become more authentic. It is, for me as well, just very empowering.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads me to this question of who you were designed to be. And that's what you talk about on that episode, giving your story. And that's a powerful question, you know, like,
yeah,
it brings up a lot for me. And so when you think about being who you were designed to be, what comes up for you? What does that mean?
I think it means living your purpose, you know, what you were meant to do in this lifetime. Now, you know, my purpose, I feel, is to love myself first so that I can and I'm able to love others, because self-love is not selfish. And I want to have my cup overflowing with love so that it overflows to those around me that want to receive it. To me, what that looks like is it looks like sharing my story and what's helped me in my healing journey. And like we said, healing isn't a destination. It's definitely an ongoing thing. But, you know, just because I have a podcast and I've been out of the fog for a while doesn't mean there isn't more to do. And that fog still rolls in once in a while from time to time. And I think that's a normal part of the process. It always comes up when you think you reached the finish line. When you think you're done, it's like, nope, you have one more thing to learn. So I've learned there is no finish line, and I'm okay with that. I've embraced the growing and the learning through all of that. And, you know, if I go through something hard, I am going to learn from it, and I'm going to share with others what I have learned. Otherwise, what's the point of going through it, you know?
Yeah, what a great perspective. I love that. Self-love isn't selfish. I so agree.
Yeah.
And I think it's really led you to somatic therapy, right? Becoming a certified therapist to help adoptees. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that was a crazy, crazy thing. I mean, even getting into the podcast was a crazy thing, because I started a podcast without ever listening to a podcast. You know, it was just like this knowing inside of me that I was supposed to do it. And I didn't even start talking about adoption. I did like 24 or so episodes of other stuff. And I ended up joining a adoptee Facebook group thinking, oh, this will be fun. And then I was on there for a few days and I was like, what the heck is going on? We are talking about stuff we're not supposed to be talking about on this page. Like, we're not supposed to be saying that about our adoptive parents and our birth parents. You know, I was just taken aback because I didn't have that same experience that a lot of adoptees do, of the pain and the hurt, you know, and all that. But at the same time, it gave me permission to kind of explore that myself and say, like, okay, now that makes sense, you know, kind of that Me Too thing. So that was kind of a gift that it gave me, was actually that connection, you know, and that it was okay that we had these feelings. But I was in a closed adoptee group. We were all talking, and this older gentleman was on there, and he said, I've had body pain since I was 4 years old. He says, and I have no idea where it's coming from. And I don't know why, but I wrote that line on a sticky note and I stuck it on my wall. And I just couldn't stop thinking about it. And like 3 days later, I went to my massage therapist and she's like, oh, hey, did I tell you I went and did this somatic therapy? And because she had her husband had committed suicide recently and she was struggling. And within three sessions, she was just like amazed at what happened. And I was just like, what is this therapy? And so I looked up, because the lady that had developed it was starting a course in a few months. And so I looked at every word on her website and I was just like, this is it. I've never even done a session, but but I signed up for the 6-month course because I just, again, know that had that knowing inside of me that this was it. And so what the course is, therapy is, it's called Somatic Mindful Guided Imagery. And it uses light hypnosis, imagery, and meditation, and it accesses your subconscious mind where all the answers are, literally. And it's really easy and gentle, and it's very efficient, and it clears like the blocks that are keeping you from living the life that you want to live. It integrates parts that you lost along the way, maybe from trauma or, you know, family expectations or even adoption. It clears those things that at the time, way back then, those things were parts that protected you from harm, and those loops and behaviors, they continue, you know, you just keep continuing those loops, even if they're not useful anymore. And in fact, they can become harmful and hold us back from living the life that we deserve. You know, I just feel like we're not put on this earth to be miserable. You have a purpose and you have a part, and that is being happy and prosperous as part of that purpose. What I kind of think is unique with somatic mindful guided imagery is that it includes feelings in the body. So it's great to have that cognitive therapy, and the talk therapy is great, but oftentimes it just kind of leaves a little bit something behind. And I have a lot of clients say that there's something stuck. There's still something there. And that's what this therapy is great for. Anyone that's feeling stuck, either professionally or personally, because it does access that subconscious mind where all your power and your essence and your knowing is there. So, you know, sometimes you just need a little help getting there, learning how to access it. But it's pretty amazing. And I've been practicing it for a year now, and I've seen some pretty crazy results. And I've had some crazy results, especially kind of tying with my birth mother and kind of learning to have some compassion for her and things like that, that I was kind of stuck there. So it's pretty amazing. Yeah. And if anybody is interested, I have a website, somaticjourneys.com. So somatichealingjourneys.com. So if anybody wants to know more about that or me, they can find it on there.
Oh, yes. I'm happy to include whatever link in the show notes. Yeah.
Okay, perfect.
I'm somewhat familiar, just a little bit, actually, with somatic therapy. Yeah, I find it so fascinating. So I definitely want to learn more about that. So you might be hearing from me on that for sure. Because something about accessing the subconscious is very interesting to me, because I think a lot goes on in that area, right, that we need to be aware of.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where all the answers are. You don't need a hero to save you. Stop looking for a hero to save you, because you are the hero.
You are the hero. Yeah.
You are the hero.
That.
Yeah.
And I did want to spend a little time talking about your reunion, because you did that pretty early on in life. I've only been in reunion with my maternal side since 2012 and my paternal side since 2017. So do you want to talk a little bit about reunion, what that's been like for you?
Pretty interesting, especially lately. I don't know if I talk to you about some of the newly things that happened. Well, you know, like you had said earlier, I hired these ladies called the Snoop Sisters to find my birth mother, and they did that pretty quickly. And this was, you know, in the early 90s, so no internet or, you know, anything. All we had were phone books back then. And what kind of sparked it was I was 18 and I saw a file in my parents' drawer with my name on it. And I was like, what the heck is this? So they were gone. So I was looking through the file. I saw some letters from my birth mother's doctor that they had sent through the adoption agency, because I guess she was having some health issues and they were trying to figure it out. So they're trying to see if there was something genetic or if I was having any problems. Now, mind you, I was 18 at the time this letter came to my parents, and nobody told me about it. So I was legally an adult, and I still didn't know this, and I wouldn't have known if I wouldn't have gone snooping. I ended up at my doctor's office a few years later after like trying to search and get nowhere. And I found her name in my file, in my health file. So I had that. And that's when I found the Snoop Sisters. And like I said, they within weeks had my original birth certificate and had everything. And my birth mother was super excited to get in touch with me. she was like, how come you didn't contact me the day you turned 18? I was waiting, you know. And I was probably like 23 at the time or something like that. The honeymoon phase of the reunion was great. And she came to visit me. She lived in Oregon. I was in California. Brought my two little brothers and her husband at the time. And everything was great. And then we would go to visit her and stay with her and stuff. And she would like pull my husband at the time aside and she'd be like, what's wrong with her? How come she's not being like very friendly? And I thought I mean, I was being myself. I didn't feel like I was holding anything back, but I think she had the expectation of being my mother. And I had a mother that I loved and was my mother. I didn't need another mother. It was very difficult figuring out where to compartmentalize her in my life. It almost felt like a cool aunt, you know, that I had a lot in common with or something like that. But I think her expectation was different. And she would say things like, how come you have brown hair? And she had blonde hair. And your dad and I had hazel eyes. How come your eyes are brown? I was just like, well, I don't know. You tell me. And it just kind of made me feel like I definitely wasn't what she was expecting.
Did you think that she was stuck, like maybe stuck in her trauma?
I'm sure. I think she had this fairy tale in her head that she'd been playing over and over and over that was going to happen the day I turned 18, that I was going to come find her and it was going to be whatever it was she had envisioned, you know? Mm-hmm. And it obviously wasn't that. And here the whole time I'm thinking, this is going great. And she's like, what? This isn't what I was thinking was going to happen. That's kind of the impression I got.
Right. Yeah, that's something, because I've heard you say that her expectations were different than yours. And I can just picture that for any of us in reunion, yeah, where we kind of have our minds set on it being a certain way. And it could be like something as simple as calling the birth mom by their first name and them wanting us to call them mom, right? It could just be all these little things. And
it's, brother was at the time, and he got mad at me. He was like, why are you calling her, you know, by her first name? Why aren't you calling her mom? He was, you know, he's seven. He didn't understand, but I remember him being angry and I didn't know what to say to him,
right.
Complicated.
I think that's an inability. And I was talking to an adoptee recently about this. I think it's an inability for our biological families to empathize with us as adoptees. I think a lot of that goes on. And maybe because we as adoptees, a lot of us are doing the work, or we've been living this experience in a very different way than they are, being separated mm-hmm. from us. And so it's like new to them, just the whole idea of sitting with what happened to us.
Right. Yeah. I think they don't want to think about it. And that's also, I think they feel like, what did I not do that this is still a problem for you? You know, that they didn't do something for you, that they didn't care for you in a certain way, for them to realize that it's nothing you did or didn't do. It has nothing to do with you at all. This was before you, you know. I think that's a huge realization, because I know for my mom, it was like, I'm so sorry. What did I, you know, what could I have done different? It's like, nothing, mom. Mm-hmm. It's nothing.
But you hold a great deal of compassion for what she went through, because what she went through, listening to it, seemed really hard for her back then. Yeah, it seems really hard. And all these years later, you know, wanting, I guess, it to have been different and hoping, well, maybe we can make it up, you know, like that's probably the attitude she had.
Yeah. And even still, like my daughter about a month ago, she said, Mom, I'm going to call your birth mother. And I said, why? My daughter's 29. She's like, well, because we're both having these, you know, health issues, and I want to see if she knows anything. I'm like, okay, well, she'll be open to talking to you, you know, about that. And so she did. And my birth mother was asking her lots of questions about me. And my daughter was like, well, I don't really feel like, you know, that's my area to talk about. She kind of alluded to some things, and I was thinking, we have a totally different scenario of what happened with the second rejection that I got, you know, and I'm like, that's so weird that we have a different take on it. And then it starts making me second guess what I think happened, you know,
sure.
But it just goes to show, you know, that you can two people can look at the same car accident and see it a different way. You know, it's just.
Oh, for sure.
It's that. It just, it was crazy when she was saying some things and I was like, that's not how I remember it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so many dynamics that go on. And I can only wonder what my reunion with my birth mother might have been. She was deceased when I learned of her identity, but I often think, would there have been rifts, right? Like, and where they might be, you know, how they may surface. Because I can't really picture calling her mom. I definitely think it would be first name. And I think it would be more like just a relationship starting from now. You know, like if I just met somebody for the first time, we would just have to get to know each other, you know, all of that. And where they would fit would take time, or how it would fit. Mm-hmm. So, I imagine it's really hard. I picture that.
I really feel like adoptees, I think it should be required reading for adoptees to read some of these birth mother memoirs that are out right now.
Mm.
I don't know if you've read any of them.
Oh, I've read plenty.
Oh my gosh. If you don't have compassion after reading that, I mean, I'm not saying that's everybody's story, you know,
right?
Obviously, but if you don't have some compassion for the trauma that they went through and how over the years they've had to deal with it and what, you know, what behaviors come out because of that and how they navigate in the world, you know, from that point on, if you don't have compassion for that after reading some of these books, I don't even know. Like, I really think everybody should read a couple.
I totally agree. And one of the first books I read by Anne Fessler, The Girls Who Went Away, that's where I remember opening my heart in compassion started. And Anne Fessler is not a birth mom, she's an adoptee, but she writes about all of these birth moms and their journey being sent away. But then reading memoirs by birth moms, it was life-changing for me. And I think I totally agree. Like, I couldn't help but hold space for that hardship. So, yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. I absolutely think that that has helped me to better understand what's going on for a mother relinquishing a child, which, you know, I can't even imagine. I have a son and I can't imagine relinquishing him at birth.
Yeah,
that's got to be the hardest thing. And I think you said your birth mom said that it's the most difficult thing that she's ever had to do.
I can imagine. I can only imagine.
Right. Well, is there anything else you wanted to say about reunion, your paternal side?
There's not really much there. I mean, I met my dad, birth father, one time. It was very superficial. You could tell he didn't want to talk about anything. Just everything was surface level. I have two half-sisters from him, and it's been a little complicated with one of them because she didn't tell my other sister or me when our father passed until about 3 months later. She claims that he didn't want us there. And I was like, I haven't seen him in years. Like, what have I done, you know? And I really didn't feel like I had a right to have feelings about it, you know, because I wasn't his biological daughter anymore. But I did feel bad for my other sister, who was his biological daughter still, and didn't know her father passed and didn't get a chance to go to the funeral. So I have relations with both of them, but I don't know. I think just not growing up with them kind of makes it difficult on both of our ends. We try to have that bond, you know, but there's like some kind of link missing from not growing up together, I think.
Yeah, not having the history. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry that you learned 3 months after he died. That sounds hard. Yeah, that seems very difficult. I had a family friend who knew my birth mother, and I got so much information from her, And I remember when she died, nobody called to let me know. And oh, it felt so hard. Not only did I feel left out, but I felt like, wow, like nobody thought that this would be something I would want to know. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
I'm sorry that happened.
Yeah.
Well, that brings me now to being a part of the community. You mentioned you started your podcast and you had 24 episodes in that didn't have anything to do with adoption.
Yeah.
Well, you tell me that, I said, that's something. Like, yeah, like how
I
you
knew I was supposed to start a podcast. I didn't know what the frick I was doing. I was doing what I was told to do.
But I think it's great that you allowed your path through connecting online with a group or groups and realize, hey, wait a minute, right? And what has been challenging and or rewarding about being connected to the community?
Yeah, there's a lot of both. I think the rewards was, I think I kind of mentioned, just getting permission to have feelings about being adopted in the first place. You know, I'd bring up things and you get that feeling like you're not supposed to talk about it, you know, in my family. Just having that permission and that freedom, and then also seeing, you know, other people that have had the same experiences, you know, that Me Too camaraderie thing was amazing. Having and, you know, getting some great connections with people that actually know and understand what you're talking about. Like you said, it brought me to my podcast and now, you know, my somatic therapy. So I got a lot of rewards, and I would say the challenges are just, you know, seeing all the hurt out there is difficult for me. And just witnessing all these people that are stuck or that they don't want to feel better is difficult. I find myself like wanting to comment, and you're like, you're just going to trigger something. Don't, you know, you can tell, you have to be careful of, you know, where you put your toe in. And then just watching the gaslighting that goes on because maybe somebody doesn't have the same experience as you, and that causes, you know, some triggers and things. Like, I get told all the time that I shouldn't have an opinion because I had a good adoption. Mm. So, you know, that's hurtful because I still do have a primal wound. I still had consequences from that, but I get that a lot, that I shouldn't have a voice in some of the forums or, you know, in the post threads. But I think everybody, like I said, needs to read some of these birth mother stories and even, you know, talk to adoptive parents, because until we get the entire picture, and after mostly talking to adoptees, you know, all this time for almost 2 years now, I came to the realization that that's just one piece of the puzzle. And if we really want to educate the world about adoption, we have to start with the other pieces. I mean, it didn't start the day you were adopted. It started with a birth mother and father having whatever issues they were having and their story. And maybe even goes farther than that. Maybe it's even generational. It could be way before them, you know. So there's just so many pieces that need to come together so that we can see, you know, I don't think adoption's going away anytime soon. I know there's a lot of people that say, you know, it needs to be abolished and this and that, but it's not going anywhere anytime soon. So what can we do now? You know, we need to all come together, and what can we do to be the change that we want to see in this arena? You know, and you just can't do that if you're gaslighting each other and arguing and, you know, not being validating and having a compassion for somebody that's had a different experience.
Absolutely. And I can really appreciate that you do include all members of the constellation. In fact, one episode I listened to of a birth mom was really moving to me. She had an open adoption and it went fairly well. And she gave a lot of credit to the adoptive parents. Mm-hmm. And so I think we do need to hear these stories. We need to hear from everybody about the trauma, their lived experience. Like you say, things were happening before we were relinquished.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a story there too. And so it is important. So thank you for sharing that. I've recently paid a little bit of attention to the pushback from some adoptees. They're not interested in hearing from anybody but adoptees. And
yeah,
like I find that interesting because I think that I want to know the whole story. I do. I want to know. I want to see the whole entire picture. And I think I can make better decisions once I know the full story, like all sides, so to speak. And yeah. And I think we have the potential to help others in the constellation as well, because mm-hmm. I think that when everybody has an opportunity to heal, everybody benefits.
Yeah.
Right.
I think a lot of people that are hurting feel like if I give compassion to that person that hurt me, no matter what the circumstance or their story is, if I give them compassion and release them from that, then I'm saying it's okay what they did to me. And I think that's a wrong way of looking at it. I don't think it's saying it's okay. It's just saying that I see maybe why you did something. It still hurt me, but I can understand maybe why you made that choice. I might not have made that choice, but.
I say that all the time. Understanding is very different than agreeing.
Yeah.
And yeah. I may not have made that choice that you made, even though I understand why you did.
Yep.
Yeah. That's so clear to me.
Yeah.
So I definitely appreciate you sharing your perspective and having your podcast. When I think of the name, Mind Your Own Karma, it kind of reminds me to stay in my lane, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that does not mean not honoring myself, but to kind of understand that I have a responsibility. I think you used that word earlier, like owning my responsibility and how I show up, because that is going to affect everything else. And back to the self-care, right? Like if in self-love, and if I'm in a good space, then I am positioning myself to be able to help somebody else. That's how it works. I think that's just like one of those laws.
It sounds pretty easy. I don't know why.
And it's a process, and I'm certainly not saying it's easy or you get it done. It's just kind of a path to take that I think in the long run you'll realize, you know, this is working out for me and others.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just a couple more questions. And mm-hmm. I've been asking guests, and it's, what would Melissa's self, like your future self in 2034, tell Melissa in 2024?
Wow. You've come a long way, baby. I would say probably congratulations. Great work. You're strong, you're caring, you're compassionate, you're powerful, and just keep bringing that light to those that want to find theirs. It's all invitational. It's when you start pressing people that they start pressing back. And so that's why I say for those that want to find their light, because some people aren't ready. And so if they're ready, I'm here to help you, you know?
Yeah, I like that. That's a really beautiful answer. And I know you say at the end of your episodes on your podcast, keep what you want and leave what you don't want. You say it a lot better than I just did. But
yeah.
What do you say? Say it.
Take what you need and leave what you don't.
Take what you need and leave what you don't. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a great conversation with you. And is there anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to share?
I don't think so. I think we pretty much covered it.
You're doing doing good on the West Coast. That's my favorite place to be, San Francisco. I know you're in Modesto. That's not far, right?
No, I was born in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So it's about an hour and 15 minutes, you know, depending on traffic. Obviously, traffic's crazy, but yeah, pretty close.
Well, the West Coast is treating you well, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is. Nice and sunny today.
Well, thank you, Melissa, for having this conversation with me. I really appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on. And thank you for everything that your podcast brings to the community and just the awareness and the education. I just appreciate everything that you're doing as well.
One of the most challenging things about interpersonal relationships is when two people have different expectations of the other and or our intentions not matching the interpretations. I understood Melissa's words that she didn't need another parent in reunion, that may be hard for a birth mother to recognize and acknowledge, yet it may be an adoptee's truth. Too often, adopted people have chosen people-pleasing over self-love. I appreciate it, Melissa, reminding us that it isn't selfish to honor oneself, and it can be one of the best ways, gifts even, to demonstrate our love for others. Being prepared for magic can start from a painful journey, and at the same time, we can hold compassion for ourselves. It resonated with me to frame things in a way that suggests that everything in time is ultimately working for and not against us. It is not easy, but we can find the treasures in the unpleasant experiences in life. Hats off to all the search angels around the world who have used their talents, skills, and resources to help adoptees gain access to their original birth certificates, especially when certain states, such as California, do not have open records. Thank you, Melissa, for having this conversation with me. It was every bit of the good time that I had envisioned because of the respect we have for each other in service to our community. I'm excited every time I think about your work as a somatic practitioner, which in your words is a newly emerging and highly effective modality that can heal trauma of all kinds. Your dedication to providing that service is sure to be a valuable resource to other adoptees from wherever in the world that they may be connecting with you via Zoom. I'll be listening to Mind Your Own Karma, telling others about it, and tuned in to hearing your courageous guests share a part of their relinquishment and adoption journey. If you're an adoptee and would like to share your adoption journey, visit JenniferDianeGolston.com. If you like Once Upon a Time in Adoptee Land, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Follow and or give, hopefully, a 5-star rating so others can find it too. During the course of your day, I trust you will tell at least one friend or someone who you believe might find value in it, because word of mouth is still the very best way for the show to grow. Thank you for being here.